Fade in. Cut to.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar. Club.
Day.
Night.
Action! All right, what I'm about to say is neither here nor there, but it will be going somewhere. We're watching a show called Reacher. It doesn't matter if you like it or you don't like it. We don't really care. But what we do care about is the opening scene, the first ever scene of Reacher. He is at a diner, a fictional restaurant. The first time we actually learn about the character, we get some exposition, some metaphor. He is discussing his past with a Clark bar, a fictional food. And we said to ourselves, hey, I wonder if there is a show that takes a deep dive into the fictional restaurant, bar, and club in TV and film. And then I said to myself, well, holy crap, no, that's my show. That's what restaurant fiction's about. And we've been about that. We do that. So anyway, my name is Manus Rose, and thank you for watching Restaurant Fiction. And that is what we do. We review the fictional restaurant, bar, and TV and film. But we're not talking about Reacher on this episode. That'll soon come. Don't you worry. We are talking about Lawman Bass Reeves. And we are bringing on the showrunner, the creator of Lawman Bass Reeves, Chad Feehan. Now, why Lawman Bass Reeves? Because guess what? Chakota Saloon is so, so prominent. And also the horrific steak dinner in the incredible season finale. So anyway, yeah, Chad is on. We met in Austin Film Festival. I pitched him Restaurant Fiction and he said, yes, let's do it. So here is our awesome conversation with Chad. All things Lawman Bass Reeves, all things Chakota Saloon, Texas, writing, motivation. I mean, it's some really good shit. Yeah, I said that. It's my podcast. I could do whatever I want. It's my show. That's right. All right, stay tuned. Chad, listeners, when you're wandering about, a stranger in a strange land, particularly in Chakota, and you want to meet some people, you want to get a lay of the land, you don't go to the school, you don't go to church, you don't go to the hotel, but you go to the saloon, the Chakota Saloon. Now, when you step inside, the first thing you hear is the minstrel music. You see the cheesy wallpaper. You smell the gunpowder smoke that has already been used or is about to be. The bartender, the most original OG hipster to ever walk the face of the earth. And I'm talking OG as OG gets, with the suspenders, the mustache, and the like. He gives you a whiskey. This is not the place for single-aged or a high pedigree super premium. No, it's just whiskey, and it flows like the river. This is the land of vice. You can get a woman of the night. You can gamble. You could smoke. I'm not going to lie. Everyone's carrying, and they're all fully loaded. And the safeties, I don't think guns really have safeties, but they're off. That's not why you come, though, for the Chakota Saloon. And you don't come for the food either. You see, the food and the real sustenance is information. And of all of the places in the main thoroughfare and in the entire world, information is the key to always move the story forward. And you're always going to find that, whether that be from a crook, whether that be from an employee, whether that be from a law-abiding citizen, It's going to be in the Jacoda Saloon. So that's what makes a visit worth it. All right, that was our very quick review. Oh, and one more thing before we actually jump into questions. We were invited to Esau's steak dinner, but we refused. For a lot of reasons, Restaurant Fiction refuse. One of the reasons, not the main one, but close to the main one, is that we heard rumors that the steak was tougher than leather, and it tasted like dirt from underneath a used and abused cowboy boot. All right, so anyway, we are talking to Chad Feehan. Chad Feehan, you are the showrunner, you are the creator of Lawman Bass Reeves. Where is where the Jacoda Saloon is? What is your take, your opinion, your advice, all things, I mean, yeah, on the Jacoda Saloon?
Spot on. The one caveat that I'd add is that, you know, booze was illegal in Indian Territory at the time. And therefore, we viewed the Jacoda Saloon as more of a speakeasy, as more of a hidden gym behind closed doors that law enforcement knew existed, turned a blind eye to because it became such a wealth of information about the criminals that they were pursuing in Indian Territory.
So at what point are you saying to yourself, what does Bass eat or drink?
We had a couple conversations about food and drink relative to Bass in particular, and we viewed Bass as such a dedicated servant of justice, if you will, that food and drink were just sustenance for him. Food and drink were things that were to fuel his body in order to pursue the outlaws in Indian Territory that he was tasked with pursuing.
Why the saloon? Why make that the most integral place to receive information and move the story forward versus the school, versus the church, versus, you know, a house or the hotel?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it was just as simple as, you know, where do bad men like to congregate? It's not at a school, you know, it's not at a bank, unless they're doing bad things at the bank. It's where the booze is served. And, you know, we paid homage to that with the Jacoda Saloon Speakeasy as well as the Bordello. And those were the two places that Bass would go in our story to find the people he was pursuing, or at least find information about the people he was pursuing.
What kind of field research did you do on the Jacoda Saloon?
So I grew up in Fort Worth, Texas. And Fort Worth obviously has a rich Western history. And the stockyards, which for anyone who hasn't been, is worth the trip. It is a trip down memory lane in terms of the old West. And, you know, I spent a good majority of my youth stomping the brick sidewalks and brick roads of the stockyards, going into various watering holes and having a good time. So, you know, there's a famous saloon that started in Fort Worth called the White Elephant that I think opened its doors in 1880s or 1890s that we actually pay homage to in the finale. For the viewers, if you look closely, when Bass and Cheryl and Billy Crow are waiting for Esau's posse man to emerge, he emerges from the White Elephant Saloon in Fort Worth, Texas. So, and it still exists today. Yeah.
Do you recommend going?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's owned now by a local celebrity chef in Fort Worth, a man named Tim Love, who owns a number of restaurants in the area. And I believe its original location was in Hell's Half Acre, which was downtown Fort Worth, which is what we dramatize in the finale of Bass Reeves, but is subsequently moved to the Stockyards.
You wrote the pilot, and you also wrote the finale. Now, if you only had a choice to write one or the other, which one and why?
It's a good question because it's a tough question. I love them both. I would say that I had more fun writing the finale. It was it pulled on things that I had done before in shows like Banshee, or even Ray Donovan to a lesser degree. And the idea that popped in my head that I had a lot of fun with was, what if Bass Reeves walked into Colonel Kurtz's lair from Apocalypse Now? What would that look like? How would he respond? And the story sort of grew from there.
So we see the footprints, and then we see the taxidermy.
That was the inspiration for that. Was, again, it just one day popped in my head, and I went to the writer's room, and I said, what does it look like if Bass Reeves walks into that hellscape from Apocalypse Now that Colonel Kurtz was operating from? And you bring up the footprints and the T-Rex skull. Glen Rose is obviously a real place in Texas, not far from Fort Worth, where I grew up. And I'm going to get the facts wrong, but it is one of the most, one of the richest deposits of dinosaur fossils in the world. The whole city's tourism industry is built around that notion. And so, you know, you drive into the city, and immediately there's dinosaur statues everywhere. And the dinosaur track that Bass encounters is real. It's not, we didn't shoot the actual track because they're well preserved, but there are dinosaur footprints in the Paluxy River that have been fossilized in Glen Rose, Texas. It's one of those things that, you know, you grew up hearing about and sort of plants itself in your brain, and then one day you're like, holy shit, I can use that in a TV show. You know, and so, you know, we wanted Bass to be as off kilter as he possibly could. And, you know, I can't imagine what it would have been like in the 1870s to see a T-Rex skull and have no concept of what it was or where it came from or what animal it belonged to. So yeah, that was one of the devices we used to put Bass on his back foot.
How do you put your own voice in existing IP?
You know, as a writer, you try to pull your own experiences that are somewhat relevant to what the character's doing, going through, and then you put those emotions into the story. Obviously, with something like Bass Reeves, there are infinite things that I couldn't know or understand based on the color of my skin versus the color of Bass Reeves' skin. And so when it comes to those elements of the story, it's incumbent on any showrunner to hire talented writers who can relate to those experiences, who can educate you to the things that you don't know. And then you take those things and you listen and you try to learn. And then as a team, you put some of those thematics into the show as well.
All right, role play with me for a sec. So say your next series is going to be based on your dream fictional bar. What is it and what does it look like?
I'm a huge P.T. Anderson fan. Magnolia in particular is certainly in my Desert Island movie list. And I would love to make a show about the bar that Wiz Kid Donnie goes to when he is in love with the bartender with the braces. I think it's a bar in the valley here somewhere in Los Angeles. Sadly, I've never been, but that whole sequence has always just been right at the forefront of my image database, if you will, of movies and television shows. And I would love to see what would happen in a show that just takes place in that dive bar in the valley that attracts people like WizKid Donnie. And I can't remember what the bartender's name is. I want to say it's Chad. It would be very appropriate if it was Chad, but it was one of those names like my own that often gets associated with the meathead, if you will. And so, you know, that bartender with his braces and his tan and his muscles, and Donnie sitting there drinking, and then the other gentleman, I'm blanking on the actor's name, who was also in The Burbs, the older gentleman, that they're both, you know, pining over this bartender's affections. And it was a very surreal, you know, sequence. And I've always been like, what would a show look like that took place in that bar? So I hope that's a good answer.
How do you stay consistently creative and not plateau?
It's tough. The thing that works for me is going on Spotify or Pandora or Amazon Music, typing in an artist or a song that I love, listening to that station while taking a 3 or 4 mile walk, and just letting my mind wander. It can be dangerous in Los Angeles with some of the drivers. So you kind of have to keep your head on a swivel and not daydream too much. But whenever I'm creatively in a rut, that is the first thing I'll do, is put on my AirPods. Lately it's been George Michael radio for whatever reason. Taking a 3 or 4 mile walk while listening to George Michael radio, and, you know, inevitably some idea will pop into my head. So,
I mean, you gotta have faith.
Gotta have faith.
In your profession, what bad recommendations do you hear?
You know, I can say that people who try to chase trends typically are too late. And so, you know, it takes even the fastest of writers several months to generate something. And then you got to sell it, and then you got to, you know, package it, and then you got to get it financed, and then, you know, and by the time you get to the starting blocks, I've seen a number of times that trend has ended. So I would say that if I had to say one thing, is don't chase trends. Do what's in your gut.
Interesting question here. What is an unusual habit you do, or an absurd thing you love?
I have to write with a candle. So when I sit down to outline or sit down to write, I have to have a candle burning in my office. So I do that. I listen to music with lyrics while I'm thinking and while I'm doing the writing in my head, while I'm actually pounding the keyboard. I can't have any lyrics, so I get distracted. River was an exception, just because it was so thematically appropriate to what Bass's journey in the pilot was. But typically I'll put on Score while I'm actually pounding the keyboard. I chew a lot of Nicorette. helps me focus. Those are the things that I do that are a little bit maybe different from some writers.
Scented candle, or no, just like a candle, like just like a wax.
Scented candle. Right. Right now I'm on the Buck Mason, which is a clothing brand. They've come out with a candle, and I'm on that kick right now. So I'm burning a lot of Buck Mason candles in my office. So they smell wonderful. So.
Tough one. What failure of yours has actually turned out to be an ultimate success?
Yeah. So, easy answer for me. I went to the American Film Institute for producing, and I got my master's in producing and had some early success as a producer. Made a movie called All the Boys Love Mandy Lane, which we sold to the Weinstein Company at the Toronto Film Festival, and then sold a feature that I developed with a writer shortly after that, that was fast-tracked and felt like, you know, I was going to be the next Jerry Bruckheimer. I was awfully naive at the time in my mid-20s to think that. And things, you know, we sold Mandy Lane in 2006, I believe. And then everything sort of started to slow down. And I'd found a book called Twilight by an author named William Gay that I had optioned, that I intended to hire a writer to adapt and to make into a feature. And the writer's strike of the, not this past one, the one before, had happened, and we couldn't get a writer, obviously, to adapt the material. And I was not in the guild, and the option was about to expire. And a friend of mine who at the time was producing the movie with me said, well, why don't you adapt it? I mean, why don't we at least try to get a script out of this before we lose the option? And I was devastated because I believed in the book and thought that we were going to get a, you know, notable writer to adapt it. And she convinced me, and I sat down and adapted that book. And it completely changed the trajectory of my life. Once the strike ended, I finished up that script, sent it to a few people, and ended up signing with CAA. And then it ended up, I think, number 10 on the 2011 blacklist. And I was no longer a producer. I was a writer at that point.
So you're from Texas, and Texas is incredibly rich with stories. On the big screen and the small screen, we've seen high school football portrayed in Texas. We've seen Westerns, including yours. We've also seen a story about 1970s, 80s, Silicon, or I should say Texas Silicon Valley, which was portrayed in the very, very, very underrated Halt and Catch Fire.
It was the Tandy Corporation, which was based in Fort Worth, which is where I grew up. I remember reading that pilot before it was made, and I cursed myself. I was like, why, why did these guys get this story? And I had the same feeling watching the Iron Claw. It was like, I mean, the Iron Claw, you know, the first 45 minutes was just pure nostalgia for me. It was, you know, I grew up in Fort Worth, which is a stone's throw from Dallas. But it was Dallas in the 1980s, which was when I grew up. But there's definitely something in the water in Texas that breeds storytelling. I don't know what it is. You know, there are certainly stories that are passed down from generation to generation. People are sort of groomed to be storytellers in Texas. It's part of the culture. You know, I had heard about Bass Reeves as a kid from a family member who loved to tell stories. And told me about Bass, and that story never left my brain. And so when I got the call, I was like, absolutely, I'd love to meet with David Oyelowo. But Texas is rife with content. For any aspiring writers out there, one thing you can do is get a subscription to Texas Monthly. And you'll be shocked at the wealth of material that exists in that magazine every month that, you know, a lot of people option those articles to turn them into movies or television shows, but just by reading them, they'll inevitably open some door in your imagination that'll provide you something that you can use.
Last question. Chad, what question am I not asking?
How do you find success in this business? I would say it's four factors, and two of them you can't control. One of those two is luck. and the other one is talent. You know, you can't control luck and you can't control how much talent you've been endowed with from birth. But there are two things that you can control, which is longevity. You know, the people that I've seen that have had success in this business are the people that are able to find a way to sustain themselves day in and day out while they pursue the dream. That they don't come here for 3 years, get fed up with the no's, and then turn around, pack their bags, and go back to wherever they're from. So it's longevity. It's a marathon. It's not a race. You know, that you can control. And how anybody chooses to support themselves in the interim, you know, there are a myriad of ways in this town to do that. I taught at West LA College, which is not far from here, to pay my rent while I was trying to, you know, when I was first starting out and trying to become, when I was transitioning from producing into writing. You know, the other thing that you control is your work ethic. A lot of people are overwhelmed by the concept of writing a whole feature or writing a whole pilot script. And I get it. Like, I still get intimidated by that notion. But what you can do is say, I'm going to present a scenario to myself. A guy walks into a room to do a podcast interview, and suddenly three men kick in the door and they've got guns. What happens?
Which, by the way, there's going to be guns later.
Yeah. But just write that scene. Just write that scene. You know, just exercise a muscle by writing that scene. And you can come up with a myriad of different scenarios. And you don't have to turn it into a feature. You don't have to turn it into a pilot. Just write a scene. Try to write a scene a day and see what happens. And they can be, you know, anything. They don't have to be connected. And then eventually, you know, the muscle will be so lubricated and get so in shape that you can say, okay, well, I do want to write that vampire thriller. But and there's moments that I can pull from this scene that I wrote 6 months ago. And there's moments from this scene that I wrote 6 days ago that I can use to start to build out, you know, the frame of that story.
Everyone, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. I hope you found any one or hopefully numerous of the anecdotes that Chad provided educational, inspirational, or just made you either want to go to Texas because it is just so rich in history and flavors. And yeah, I mean, it's a huge ass state. No disrespect or respect. I don't know which one. Anyway. Chad, thank you so much for coming on. You are welcome back anytime, each and every time, regardless if you just want to shoot the shit or not. The hot seat will be empty for you, my friend. All right. And thank you so much to the watcher, to the listener. That is you. You watched us. Please like and subscribe this episode, all the rest of the episodes, either the audio-only ones or now that we're doing video forever and ever. We really appreciate you. If you want to personally give me a shout-out, tell me what you do not like, what you love, Manus@restaurantfiction.com. Love to hear from you. Thank you. And as always, keep it fresh, keep it real, and keep on the flip side.
Fainted.
Cut to.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar. Club.
Day.
Night.
Action.